I've done a lot of stuff in my life, but I haven't made my company seven figures. This is my journey as I take other people's advice, anybody's, and apply it to my business in a pursuit to make it a seven-figure business. Here's the catch. I think 90% of advice is garbage. These people are coming onto the show to convince me otherwise. This is a visceral, comedic, and therapeutic exercise, my exercise on building a business from my POV. I'm Jeremy Redman. I'm the founder of V1. This is not boring business.
Yep.
Hey, we've got a great guest. One thing I want to say is I need your feedback. I need your emails. Email me at Jeremy, J-E-R-E-M-Y, at yourv1.com, Y-O-U-R-V-O-N-E, yourvone.com, Jeremy at yourv1.com. I need your feedback. I need your questions. I want to ask more questions from you guys, the listeners, the not boring nationers out there. So please, come on, engage with me, man. I wanna celebrate some of you too, like for doing little things, just doing things. But do that. That would help me out. And our guest today, Pia Silva, she's a contributor for Forbes. She's been written about on MSNBC, Squarespace, Summit stuff, all this kind of stuff. She's incredible. She's behind Badass Your Brand and Worst of All Design. I'm going to let her give you a little bit of extra. You can hire her to speak, right? Yada, yada, yada. Everything. She's amazing. If you follow one email list, follow mine. But if you follow two, follow hers. Okay? So, Pia, how often do you contribute to Forbes? But okay.
For who? What do you mean?
I don't know. Like, I'm a contributor to Entrepreneur, but I've like contributed like two or three times.
Oh my God. No, it's the best marketing for me.
Wow. I know.
It's yeah, just like, I use it. Yeah.
How do you bridge the difference? Like, how do you, so I want to come up with content. I want to push it out. I don't like dealing with editors, but I know it's like, hey, here you are, Entrepreneur. It's great branding. I know employees love it and everything else. So like, but how do you bridge that with like actually working on your business and like making sure, or do you see those publications as working on your business?
Yeah, 100%. People find me from Forbes all the time. That was definitely a level jump for me. Oh, listen to this. They're so cheap. They won't pay you unless you post five times a month, and I post four times a month.
No.
And because what they're paying is nothing, you know, a couple hundred dollars, like, is nothing. And it's not worth it, clearly, for me to, like, try to pump out a fifth article, even though I've thought at times, just pump out anything, you know, because over the course of a year, a few thousand dollars, I guess it's worth it. But I'm like, I don't want to put anything out there that I don't love. And you know what?
Right.
I put a lot of effort into these articles, and I can only do it once a week. So
right.
I'm not doing that fifth article. So what? You know, I get
fuck
more out of it.
Fifth article. That,
yeah,
that's the episode. Fuck the fifth article. Right
fuck
here.
The fifth article.
That's
yeah.
It. So the one thing I think, what was I doing? I don't know. I think it was the first time that I had been published in Entrepreneur. I had not known the game. I was a new player last year, and they were like, make sure you get paid for these articles. And I'm like, okay, I'm not going out of my way to try to get payroll from doing like $25 or something.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? From like Entrepreneur Magazine. You know, like I feel like, and I don't contribute that much, but they still want you to like get paid to do this. And I get it. It's like, they don't want someone to go, I do all this work and not get paid. I don't know what it's like to be a contributor anymore. Like a real recurring contributor, like every month or every week. Like, is that?
No, I use it as my platform. You know, I use it as my legitimizer. I don't look at it as anything else. You know, I'm using their brand for my benefit. I don't have to post every week. They don't, editors,
sure.
I don't talk to them. I have my portal. I post whatever I want, all I want. The only thing that sucks, and this is a big one, I'm not allowed to say badass on Forbes.
Oh, no.
My whole brand, my footer says badass star star. Your brand is my book.
No.
And links to my book.
Star star.
Uh-huh. And it's tough.
You've been censored by the world.
I've been censored, but I told them, I said, you guys are going to come around because you have to eventually. And when you do, I better be the first one that says that word on Forbes.com.
Yeah,
you better promise me.
Dude, for when you start saying ass, you can, yeah. You're,
when
you,
when you get that ass is not a curse word.
Like, have you, like, where else have you contributed work?
That's it.
Oh, that's it. Okay, so you're just in the, so like, not, okay, so I see, as I was perusing through your website, which I love, by the way.
Thank you.
For, as seen on, I love this, as seen on Forbes, MSNBC, EO Fire, we'll get to that, and then Goldman Sachs, 10,000 small businesses. What is that?
Oh, these are just places I've spoken.
Oh.
I've appeared. Yeah, yeah. But I've only I've only posted. It's a great marketing tool. And if I didn't have this column, and I guess if I had more of a need to, I would pitch guest posting on other on other blogs. I just have no need to. But that's a great strategy. I just haven't had to.
That's one. Did you find out that, like, once you've been on one thing and you leverage it, like, say you're on Forbes and you leverage that you're on Forbes, that it's easier to get that second win, that third win?
Well, I'm sure it is, but I haven't tried it yet.
Yeah, good job, Pia.
I know. But, but I will say that, you know, I got the opportunity to be on Forbes. It was, like, really easy, actually. And I don't say that, like, it's easy for everyone. I mean, when the opportunity presented itself, it was really easy to get. Because, a colleague of mine was a contributor, and her editor asked her, do you know anybody who could write about small business branding? And she was like, oh, perfect person, Pia. Because she had been getting my newsletter with my articles about small business branding for 3.5 years. So, I was the obvious person. And when I got introduced, he was like, you're the obvious person. Here you go. And he just gave it to me. So it's like really easy. And also it took 3.5 years. People don't know that.
Yeah.
There was a lot of work up front to get that opportunity. But I did it because I was about to launch my book. I was like, this is going to help me get my book out there. And sure enough, it did help me get on MSNBC. It has opened doors in all kinds of ways. So, yeah.
And would you say another thing I see on here is, this isn't supposed to be a fucking website audit, but like, I'm just on here and I enjoy what I'm looking at. And it says, interested in inviting Pia on guest as your podcast. And I'm like, Pia's on my fucking podcast. I love this. And how this came about was I got an email and I had sworn off guests at this time. Guests were boring to me. You are not boring. You're already not being a little not boring. So I appreciate your gusto. Got an email. And it was like, you've got to have my badass, I forget the exact wording, but it was like, my badass client on here. And I was taken away going like, okay, I got to get to this. I got to at least like suss this out. I got to feel it out. And then we talked on the phone and it was one of the things where I was just like, I want to have her on because she's so interesting. And you left me with a good taste in my mouth, like, after, to where most guests come on and they're kind of clammed up. And then, you know, the whole story where when you be yourself, I think you just attract people that you get along with. Well, how would you say our conversation and our pre-interview went after being after my warning episode? And I made you listen to that.
Oh, yeah. No, I listened to the warning episode, was on the train, just kind of giggling to myself here and there because you were saying things in your own way, I might add. I think I emailed you. I was like, you're like me, but you say fuck a lot more than I do. I was like, I'm not as crass as he is, despite the fact that my book is Badass Your Brand. Like, I'm in people's faces, but I'm But I don't say fuck that much. But besides that, I was like, we're vibing. We're on the same tip. He's giving examples, the, you know, selling water and the water bottle example. He's giving examples I also give because they're really poignant. So we're clearly, you know, vibing on some level.
Did
so,
you
yeah.
get to submit? Okay, so what she's talking about, Not Boring Nation, is her Forbes article entitled Four Simple Steps to Turn Impossible into Profitable for Entrepreneurs. I love this. I read it. And the did you get to submit this picture? Did they let you do that?
Oh, the no. water I mean, picture? I have complete control over it. We'd make an. So my partner in the business and my husband, he's an artist and an illustrator. So he makes a cartoon for every article I post.
Oh, my God. That is cool.
Yeah.
So he's a cartoonist.
Well, he's a painter, but he can draw cartoons. He likes doing cartoons. Yeah, so it's fun.
How do you guys compliment each other then?
Yeah, I mean, this is, you know, we brainstorm it together, but he's the one who draws the cartoons. It came about, actually, because he was showing me when we were at his parents' house a couple years ago, or they brought out all these old cartoons he had drawn. Like, whenever they would go on vacation, family vacations, he would be doodling these, like, funny cartoons of, like, whatever was, you know, the National Lampoon vacation cartoon of, you know, the kids screaming in the back. So he would, like, be journaling, cartooning their vacations. I was like, wow, you got this other skill I didn't even know you had.
I love that. Is there any way I can get a copy of this and hang it on my wall in my office?
Yeah, I'll send it to you.
Is that a thing? Can I ask for that? Like, because I want to ride this water bottle wave now. Like, and I'm looking, if you guys haven't heard, go back to the warning episode where I love the entrepreneur who bottled water. Like, that's just on them. So, okay, let's get into this. What? Okay, so badass brand, right? Badass your brand.
Yes.
What exactly is it? How did it come about? I think I have an idea. I love that it is. It almost feels like it's an in-your-face status. So, like, you tell me how you came about this and a little bit of your journey.
Okay. Well, so the word badass, I feel like everybody says badass now. You must believe me that when I said it 5 or 6 years ago, people were like clutching their pearls, you know, like they were offended sometimes. And that's what I liked about it. It's like, well, if you don't want to be badass, then you don't have to hire us. And, you know, it really summed up what we were trying to do with Worst of All Design. I mean, we're Worst of All Design. You know, a lot of people turn their, especially in the beginning, they don't do it anymore, but in the beginning, really turn their nose up. Why Worst of All? Why don't you be Best of All Design? I'm like, because you don't get branding, number one. But, you know, really, it's about we're helping other people be different. I'm saying it in the generic way on purpose. We're helping other people be different. We're different. We need to be different. I don't want to say we're different on our homepage. I don't want to say we help you stand out on our homepage. Sure. That's what everybody says. How can you even say that you help people stand out by using a phrase everybody uses? That's so lame. So, you know, badass brands without the BS, Worst of All Design, this is us being our brand. And so to me, badassing your brand is really about being whatever it is that is different about you to an extreme level. So it's got to be real, but you want to take it farther. It's not just who you are every day. It's kind of a small piece of you really blown up on a billboard. And what I have found that has done really well for my business and a lot of people I have built brands for is if you really own something very specific and really extremely, you will attract people who are also like that, who have like-minded, who love what you have to say, and you'll repel everybody else. And that's awesome because then you have this love-hate thing. You've got this, you get really raving fans that way and you can charge more for it. They love what you do. I'm all about the profit. I hate people who tout their gross revenue. Like, who cares how much you brought in? I care how much you keep. So it's all about increasing profitability, and you can increase profitability when you're really in that category of one. And you can be in a category of one if you're willing to piss some people off or just be misunderstood. People don't get it. That's fine. Your people will love it. Your people will get it. And your people will know they have to pay a premium for you because there's only you. There's nobody else but you. So they have to pay that premium if they want you. And it's worked really, really beautifully for my business and for so many others. So that's kind of the flag that I'm carrying with the Badass Your Brand methodology and book and all the stuff that I write on Forbes.
But and there's a thing here with just the title of Badass Your Brand. So like, let's say that badass is a swear word. There's a reason why Forbes doesn't want it on their platform, right?
Yes.
So it's a in your face
and Facebook ads.
And
sorry,
Facebook
I also can't.
Like
I also can't put badass. I can't advertise my own book on Facebook.
That is bullshit, right?
Yeah,
so
it
like
is.
Two. Now, let's take this. So, do you sacrifice that word, and which is kind of sacrificing a little bit of your brand for the transactional sale of it? Because you know maybe I could sell more, or is it truly about connecting with the right people that will kind of amplify that badass like? Fuck yes, I agree with this. Badass shit. Fuck Forbes for not doing this. asterisk. Like, what do you think?
Well, I can tell you from my personal experience, it creates this love relationship that allows me to work with people who are just so enthusiastic about hiring us. And they're such amazing clients because they're so enthusiastic about working with us. So that allows us to do our best work. You know, when you have a client, we build the brands. I write all the copy, we build and design the logo and the website. And our clients come in here at 10 a.m. and they leave with a fully designed and launched brand at 6 p.m. That means they said yes all day, you know? Mm. And that's what I want. And that's what Steve, my husband, and I really, that was our dream. We said, how can we just get clients to just take what we make? And that's really what this whole process that we built is about. How do we get them to just trust us and take what we make? And I think that it actually has to do with being so bold that those clients really believe us. Like, well, they must know what they're talking about if they have the balls to say that. I don't know. That's just
yes.
my guess.
Okay.
But that's, I think, the impression I get.
Which I love. So, like, getting them to say yes in a day. Like, you formulate people's brands in a day. Can a brand be formulated in a day? Or, like, how much pre-work or pre-information is necessary there?
Oh, yeah, no. We build the whole brand before they come in.
Oh, okay,
like,
got
it's, you. It's almost completely, it's as far as it can go before they come in. And then they come in, they haven't seen any of it, but they come in and we show them to it in this very specific way that we've developed over years that we know brings them along on the journey and has them understand why we did everything we did and say yes, such that at the end, it's all done in front of them. And, you know, they're a little overwhelmed, but they're like, wow, like, I have everything now. And it's like the end of the day. Like, that's a really exciting feeling as opposed to that, you know, 6 months of like going back and forth, which I feel like is just such a downer.
It
really
is
sucks
a little
the
bit,
air.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, that is what we're trying to do with like our Not Boring Business product. And we're launching a couple of new things like recent or in the next like week or so. Mm-hmm. But like automating almost communication, right? Like, I want to help you. I want to give you a good deal. I want to make it as cheap as possible. But at the same time, it's like we've got to cut out what we need to cut out. And a lot of that is unnecessary communication. Like, yes. Where is that with your strategy? Like, do you, in your experience, like there's a lot of people out there that want so much shit and they want it for nothing, right? Like, then they want to take all your time and you're like, you're taking all my resources. So is it just like an inevitability that you need to charge $40,000 or can you truly tamper their expectations? Say, I'm going to give you the same great service. It's just like these things need to be automated and I can give it to you for 12.
Yeah. I mean, we used to be that agency model. So we did do the $40,000 6-month project with all the back and forth. I mean, that, you know, I'm not using BS on my homepage just to shock. I'm literally, we took that agency model and we cut out all the bullshit and made it this model. And when we did that, we did intend to do it so that it would be less expensive. And we started with our one day being $3,000. But then we quickly built back up because we were like, we can actually give the same, no, more value in this model because it actually doesn't spend any as much of their time too. And their time is valuable. So there's a lot of different pieces to it. But what we did cut out is all this really low level wastes of time, the emails back and forth, the checkups, the feedback. Where's that piece of copy you were supposed to send me? Oh, hello. You know, you didn't pay my invoice. It's like all that bullshit that I just, it's driving me crazy. And there's none of that now, nothing. And they know. And the thing, yeah, sorry.
No, no. I don't want to interrupt a genius at work, but like, I'm telling you this, that is what I'm trying to do with our product.
You should read my book.
You help me. You help me right now. Okay, this is now therapeutic. So you tell me how I get that message across, like, ahead of time, and they know it going into it. Like, hey, because I actually put explicitly on our website, on our updated design, we are not a service, we're a product. Like,
interesting.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, just putting it out there, like, hey, we've automated communication. Here's why we're different. Like, at what point when you start up with a client, do you tell them that, and how do you tell them that?
Okay, that's a great question. That's probably one of the biggest reasons it works so well. I think it is from before you even have that conversation, what is the experience that they're having? So most of the time, people are calling me up because they heard about me, they heard me on a podcast, they read an article I wrote in Forbes, they read my book. There's something out there that gave me credibility in their eyes. Then we get on a phone call, I ask them about their situation, and then I tell them, this is how it goes. You hire me for a brand shrink for $2,000. I'll interview you and tell you what you need to do. And then after that, you'll either pay me $15,000, $25,000, or $35,000 to implement it. Mm. It happens in a day. You pay half up front. You pay the other half before we start the day. You will have your brand guaranteed at the end of this process, completely launched. I've done this hundreds of times, and you're going to fucking love it. And they either love it, or they, you know, they either go for it or they don't. You know, I try to scare people away. When I hear people say, oh, but what if after the fact I don't like it? I'm like, that is not how it works. Like, if you are the kind of person who wants to show your mother-in-law and ask for her opinion, this is not a good fit for you. This works for a certain kind of client. And, you know, and the thing is, the right clients respond to that. And believe, I'm a little sweeter when I say it.
No,
I say it with authority because I want to scare them away if they're not going to be happy. I don't want to work with someone who's going to be biting their nails the whole time. I want someone who's like, fuck yeah, that sounds awesome. I don't know what this is supposed to look like. You clearly do. I want you to make it for me. And then I go, great, I'm going to make you something really fucking awesome. And you have to just come with me on this journey.
Seriously, like, fuck your mother-in-law. You know what I mean? Like, I love that. I love that piece, that what you said. Like, if you're the type of person who wants to go ask your mother-in-law. And I'm like, yeah, like, that is just... You're so right. I don't even know what to say about that. That's just I'm in such an agreement. I'm in an agreement with, like, emotion.
Yeah, but it's for their benefit and your benefit. Like, I think that the hardest part for people in that, because I coach and train and try to teach people to do this, and you have to really believe it. You know, I say that to people because I believe that we're going to give them what they need. And I don't think they're going to get anything better. I know they're not going to get anything better anywhere else. So I can have that confidence to say it. And sometimes when I'm, you know, egging people on to do that, they don't necessarily have that confidence. And maybe they shouldn't. That's why they should start at lower prices. You increase your prices as you increase your own confidence and ability to deliver. But ultimately, this is about them getting the best product. Like, I don't want your mother-in-law in the way of you getting what you need. And that's usually what the mother-in-law or whoever it is does. They kind of mess with the project. They bring it down to the lowest common denominator. That's how generic stuff happens. That's how stuff gets watered down. That's not what we're trying to do here. I don't want to waste my time doing that, you know?
Oh, absolutely. And like, that's so much, we can give you a service that's so much cheaper just because you're like, time is expensive, right? Like, and that's why you pay 40, 50 grand. So anyway, you don't start with like you said, you've done this for hundreds of clients. You don't start there, right? Like, you start with your first client and then your second client and your third client, and your fourth client, or your customers, right? Mm-hmm. And this is kind of what we're working out with, like, me and my sales team right now, which is, guys, we need to fucking focus on immediate sales while building a pipeline, right? Like, it's not one or the other, or like, this process takes time. So a lot of times I hear from people, and I'm not calling out any employees, but like, I'm just saying, it's both. Do both. If you can't do, we're at the stage where it's like, you agree upon doing both, right? Like, if anything, we need money tomorrow. We just need more money on fucking Friday than we have on Monday, right? That's, it's that simple. How do you, how did you strike that balance, or did you not even think about that? How did you get your 1, 2, 3, your 10th client before you got 362?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I spent 3 years trying to implement and deliver the agency model. So we started as a graphic design duo in our apartment, right?
You and your husband?
Yeah, me and my husband. He was a graphic designer. I knew nothing about graphic design, branding, agencies, no background. But he is a really good designer, and I, you know, I just wanted to work for myself. So I was like, I'll go find the clients. You just do the work. You're terrible at this project management thing because you're an artist, and you're terrible at charging people. So, you know, I feel like I can figure that out. And over the course of 3 years, we hired a couple of employees. We got our office. You know, and because we increased this overhead, we had to increase our prices, and that's how we ended up charging $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 for these projects. But we were still overworking and undercharging because you almost can't charge enough for those projects. You know, they just take so much time. But that whole, so we actually ended up in debt after 3 years, like, despite working our asses off, of $40,000.
Oh, that's not much.
So,
but okay.
At the time, it was a lot. It was a lot because we didn't have any more credit. Yeah. Or cash. And we had two employees, so we had overhead.
Was it, so, like, debt? Let's get into the technics of it. Was
credit
it
card debt.
Credit card. Okay, okay.
Gotcha. Maxed out all credit cards.
I love that, by the way. I love it. Eat it. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. Oh, yeah. Taste that debt, baby.
Yeah.
You know,
it was bad. Well, the reason that that number was significant, I mean, at the time, I didn't even know you could increase your credit. Yeah, I mean,
increase
I didn't know
it,
anything.
Let's
I didn't
go to 80.
Now I have like $250,000 in available credit. Because I'm always like, oh, give me more. Yeah, I'll take it. Because, you
fucking
know, never know what I'm going to do with it.
Pia, baby.
You know,
don't take Pia shopping.
No, I love using credit cards to build my business. I try not to talk about that too much because I know people are not responsible with that. But I have built, I've invested over the years, especially no interest credit cards. I use those all the time.
Dude, people don't understand that businesses, the largest corporations,
are all
still
in debt.
It's smart to leverage debt versus equity and have that balance. Like, it's money can be cheap. Right? Like, depending on when
you get
it. Exactly. Like, you're talking about cheap money. When it's interest-free, it's cheap money. There is times where you should get a credit card and wait a few months if it's zero interest. It's smart business.
Right, but people are scared of debt. And also, I can understand, at the time, I didn't know how I was going to get that money back. Now I know I can make money. So now I'm very free to spend money because I always know I can make it back because I understand how to make it. But at the time, I didn't know. I was like, how am I going to get these clients? But so you asked how I, you know, went from one to many. That whole time, I was in that time period, let's say, I started writing my blog. I for a while there, I was networking my face off. Not something I recommend in the long term, but I did do it for over a year, really intensely, like all day, every day, horrible. But when I shifted from that old agency model to the model we have now, I did have, you know, 1,000 people that knew me and were on my email list from all that networking. I did have a blog. It wasn't very good, but people were getting my email. Like, I had been doing that work. It was providing no fruit until I got super niche and specific and clear and, you know, easy to share, easy to talk about and all of that. So I got my first client with this brand up method, and I got many more very quickly after because all these people who knew who I was finally had something easy to buy and easy to talk about. So that's why the badass branding methodology, that's why I'm such a big proponent of it, because I know that if you have something easy to talk about and sell and all of that, all your marketing efforts are going to, you know, have an exponential effect.
I think like everyone that's trying to do, like, I believe everyone can have their niche, right? Like, mm-hmm. and that niche is mostly around what your, say, personal brand or your company brand is. And I think you have a very interesting, like, if I come across your thing, it seems interesting to me. So it's, I'm already in it, right? Mm-hmm. I'm already going, mm-hmm. I like this. I like Pia a little more than I like Gia. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. this one lady, I really like her. I like that she's sad badass. You know what I mean? That's how I feel like with Not Boring Business. It just sounds intriguing. Like everywhere mm-hmm. I go, I was in South By and it was like, oh yeah. Oh, what's that do? What do you do there? You know what I mean? And I'm mm-hmm. thinking, I've got that. How do I take a rudimentary brand, which I'm starting to create right now, and how do I ignite it and then skyrocket it off? How do I do that if you were advising me?
Okay, so I would say badassing your brand, Not Boring Business. These are great phrases, you know, these are cool, stop you in your tracks, make you think, mm-hmm. but they're really, and they're powerful, don't get me wrong, but they're really surface to the rest of your brand and your business. And a lot of people use surface stuff and think that's what's going to get you there. But it's like, that's just the you know, flash of light that people are going to pay a little bit more attention to. Everything that happens yeah. after that is going to determine whether or not you've got a badass brand or not. You know, whether you've got a brand that people are like, ah, yes, I like that. Because you know what? Like I said, I see badass everywhere. And
badass everywhere, or
a lot of ladies, especially like female entrepreneurs, like Badass Women's Club or like whatever. And I'm like, there's nothing badass about that.
Like, yeah. Can we get into this for a second? Can we say that like all these like billionaire boys club, who mm-hmm. the fuck are these people that follow this shit just to think, give me your opinion. Do those people think that if they follow, get in the psyche of why the fuck someone would follow something that is called billionaire boys club? Like, you're either a fucking billionaire and you're in that, right? Like, then respect. Like, you've earned those commas.
But in that case, you're not in that club.
That's what I mean. So, like, what is it? Why would you, or why do you think people follow blindly? It's normally the worst off people that are like doing, like, it's an all my Facebook friends, it's like the worst people in the worst situations are like these motivational quotes, right? Like that their life is great, but it's really not. And then why do you think people follow those names on those social handles and those clubs like that?
I don't know. I'm not in those clubs. Oh, okay. I really don't know. Neither. And I don't know what Billionaires Good. Boys Club is.
So, I don't know. Fucking, what is it? Millionaire Mindset Secret Stash.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like those things.
Yeah, there's so much of it. You know, it's aspirational. I mean, that's what people are selling. And I have to believe, as somebody who like gives information, I have to believe that most of those people have good intentions and are trying to communicate information that's helpful, but information is only as helpful as the person taking it in and what they do with it. So I think the problem with those things, those clubs and whatever, is that most people join it and then that's what they think they did. But I think you can go in and actually take the information and you could actually do stuff. You have to give away so much information these days for free just to get people mm-hmm. on board. So the information is there. It's like, what are you going to do with it? And most people are too lazy to do anything. And, you know, that's great because that is the opportunity for anyone who isn't too lazy to do something about it.
Most people are lazy fuckers. Like, I'm dead serious. All I get are people that, like, what is it called? Slacktivism? You know what I mean? Where you like, you go online and you like, oh man, we got to do this cause. It's like, oh yeah, I'm causing this. And it's like, no, you're not, dude. I fucking know you. Like, you're not doing shit. You're sitting at home and you're fucking eating a banana. I don't know what you're doing, but I know you're not doing like this stuff that you say you're doing, which brings up another point. I think there is so much motivational content out there. And I've been told by people that, like, I need to do this, right? Mm-hmm. But I just can't do it in my fiber. So, like, there is no shortage of people who want more motivational content and don't want to do anything about it.
Yeah.
Right? Like, they just want to feel that high for, like, 10 minutes, an hour. And then when shit gets hard, like life and the day, by the end of the day, it's like, oh. And then they need their next high the next day. It's becoming drugs. Do you agree or do you disagree?
I agree. And but also, like, so?
Whoa.
They're getting their fix.
Yeah, right. So, yeah.
So
they're right. Yeah, true. Like, so, but knowing that and knowing you could monetize it and I could monetize it, does it almost feel like taking advantage of a bunch of lazy people?
That's a good point. Like, you think about everyone at Tony Robbins's whatever, and they're shaking their hands and they're they're dancing. I've thought a lot about that.
Beating sticks.
I've thought a lot. Yeah. Just rain dancing, and you get that high and then you leave and, like, you know.
And you feel like you just participated in some fucking cult meeting in a forest.
Totally.
You know what I mean?
And hey, I've done culty things. I mean, I try everything. Like,
have
it's
you?
It's yeah. Oh, right. You want to know what?
No, I want to know cult things. Tell me. You tell me the cult things.
I took. Oh, I can't believe I'm going to say this. I promise you, I'd be real.
Go. Yep. Go.
Do you know Nixium? That's been all over the papers for the sex cult.
You were in sex cult.
No. I wasn't in the sex cult. The sex cult is like something that is like some piece that I never saw. They had this executive success program, which is like, I mean, probably similar. It's the only one I've ever taken. Probably similar to Landmark and whatever Tony Robbins does. I've never done any of those, but I have a feeling in its own way, you know, learning how to understand your emotions and, like, be more successful essentially by looking at yourself, which I think is really valuable. And it did change my life. But it also, like, when you leave that thing, you are on such a high, you know, and it does go away. You have to keep doing the things in order to keep that power. So on the one hand, it's like, wow, it really did change my life and my relationship in so many ways, because it got me to see things in so many interesting perspectives that I may not have seen it before. On the other hand, I think people do it and they don't do anything with it. And so, but is it like the Institute's responsibility or Tony Robbins' responsibility to say, like, hey, if you're someone who's not, like, even if you do say it, you didn't do anything with this, so I'm going to give you your money back and tell you to go away. No, that's not their job. You know, we have to at some point say everyone has personal responsibility in this. You've decided to take this and you decided not to do anything with it. And that's not my responsibility.
Yeah,
That's
not on me that, like,
no,
that you didn't get the, like, or that it was valuable to a certain point, right? And then the value stopped and you were like, well, I want my money back, Tony. You know, like,
yeah.
By the way, did you say Nexium, like the over-counter medicine?
It's the name of the overarching company that guy ran.
No. Okay.
And I took their executive success
program. How long
ago
was this?
A couple years. I wasn't in the sex cult.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
But that's what everybody knows about it from.
Sure, got it.
It was a couple years ago. Yeah, I mean, now it's just funny because it's like on the front of the New York Times and stuff. And me and my husband are like, oh, man, people are going to think we were in a sex cult.
Yep. That's it. Like, you're already like, branded the sex badass brand.
No, we did the entrepreneurial portion of it.
The entrepreneurial part of the sex cult.
Yeah,
that's what we
basically
did. No,
that's great.
Give up on this interview. There's nothing. How the fuck am I gonna? There's no more value outside of that. That, like, there's no quote card that's gonna be better than that one. You know what I mean? Like, this is the greatest.
Is that gonna be the title of this interview?
Yep.
The entrepreneurial sex cult.
I'm telling you, the entrepreneurial sex cult.
Oh,
like,
it's gonna be so
look
bad
at this.
For my brand, Jeremy.
The badass brand. Like, okay, so tell me this though.
Yes.
I go back and forth, and, like, you are probably unabashedly my favorite. I haven't laughed like that on fucking radio. I don't even think during the warning episode, I don't know. But like, dude, with a actual guest on, I appreciate like your candor, and I think like listeners do too, right? Like, they know you weren't in the sex cult, right? Like, they get it that like explanation and context comes from that as well. And I think it's part of like being honest, you know, and like being authentic. And just like just from that warning episode, I've got like 3 or 4 text messages that were like, hey, will you do my this or will you do this? And I'm thinking, man, if the same authenticity comes from me that comes from guests, the guests are going to see those results as well, right?
Yes.
So there you go. You'll probably get a bunch of like, you'll get a bunch of business out of this, I hope.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Okay. That's it. Like,
all right.
I just got a text. Are you ready for this?
Mm-hmm.
I just got a text from my wife saying, oh, because I told her I was recording with you. So, and she was bringing it up back and forth about how, like, oh, I wasn't going to have guests, but I really liked this lady. And she goes, okay. Also, side note, don't bring up any personal stuff like how many times you have sex a week. My coworkers are listening to this.
She texted you that?
Yeah. And I'm like, because all her coworkers listen to this. So, like, hey, everybody at Holly's work. So, dude, Pia, thank you so much for coming on. Do you want to give our listeners a little, where can they find you? What do you want them to read or buy from you?
Oh, they can find me anywhere. Twitter, okay. Instagram, Facebook, @ Pia Loves Your Biz, BIZ.
Pia Loves Your Biz. I love it. Okay.
Pia Loves
thank
Your
you
Biz.
So much for coming on.
Thank you, Jeremy. Great to be here.
Hey, Pia, I want to mention a little piece of advice that I need from you. Here's what I did. So I had a list of about 2,000 people, like an email list. And I know you touched on how you kind of purge your email list from time to time. And I think that's smart, right? But what I want to know is if I did a smart thing. So I had a list of about 2,000 people, and I sent out an email that said, hey, if you don't want this, don't do anything, okay? And I had a bunch of people not do a lot of stuff, and I said, if you want to re-opt into this, click here, go to this, and then re-sign up. So there's a lot of friction points. And I thought that the people that could get over this are really, truly engaged. Now, I went from 2,000 people, almost 2,000 people, on my list to, terrible drum roll, 22 people.
For this, you go.
Yeah, well, that's a big purge, Jeremy. that's heartbreaking. But you know, it means a lot. It means that these people weren't reading your email. You know, I might suggest making sure that they got the email. I do purge my list constantly, but I do use a lot of different strategies. I purge it by emailing anybody who hasn't opened an email in 3 months. You know, a tap on the shoulder. Hey, I'm going to unsubscribe you if you don't opt in again. I also purge it by just sending out offers and not being afraid to tell people, hey, I'm doing this, I'm doing that, putting you in a sales funnel. I did a launch for a goals program a month ago, and a friend of mine emailed me and they said, how many people are unsubscribing? Because all of a sudden you're sending sales emails every day for a week. And I said, yo, if someone unsubscribes, like, good riddance. That means they're not going to buy, you know? It's like, I love sending useful content, but I'm also here to sell stuff. So if that bothers you, you shouldn't be on my email list. So I think, you know, just be you and look for that engagement. And also don't be afraid to just say what you think and say what you want and offer them stuff that you think is helpful to them. And just don't be afraid of the unsubscribe. That's my advice, because I used to be afraid of the unsubscribe. I thought it meant something about me. I took it very personally. And instead, now I'm like, get the hell off of here. This is not for you. That's what I think.
I'm telling you, I have made it to where I struggle with this, because like you said, it's a personal thing. I see a friend, I look at the unsubscribes. I'm telling you, in the email,
well, you have to stop looking at the unsubscribes. That's numero uno.
I know. I struggle with it. I saw like three friends on there, and I was like, "Fuck you! You're no longer friends." I was gonna write them off out of my.
I know.
So I'll work on it. I'll get over it.
You have to look at the unsubscribes as cleanliness. It's cleaning your email list, yeah. And your friends are not your customers, and they shouldn't be on there if they don't want it. You know, your emails are for a very specific purpose. So just keep it at that. And also there's a life cycle of people being on your email list.
Yeah. How long do you think?
I mean, I think it depends on how much value you're giving. I'm struggling with this right now. I give so much information that I think people have gotten used to. Oh, like we get great, useful, free information from Pia. And I'm exploring what that really means and if I should change that. And I don't know. I have no answer right now. But my point is, you know, I'm looking for that engagement. I love to give that value, but I'm also a business owner. And there's also, you know, a bottom line that I'm trying to hit. So, you know, just being honest about that, maybe in the emails themselves, or just at least with myself, that this is not a vanity thing. I don't need you on my email list to make me feel good. You know, I want you on my email list because eventually it's going to turn into some sort of sale down the road. And I don't have to, it doesn't have to happen right away, but I do have that intention and I shouldn't be worried about that. When you're a business owner and you're scared to sell your services or your products or whatever it is, that's not a very good position to be selling from.
Okay. I take that as gospel. You're one person that I definitely look toward for guidance. I'm going to execute on this. Well, I kind of did, but I just kind of got your reinforcement. So thank you so much for that. And everyone, Not Boring Nation, you'll be updated here in the next couple weeks with how this engagement goes. We'll see how these 20, maybe I think it's like four, maybe it's like 52 or something now. We'll see how that grows.
Good luck, Jeremy. Maybe you'll have 100% open rate, and then you can talk about that
on your
podcast.
It better be
100%. You have the best open rate of any business owner anywhere. It's amazing.
That's
a good subject line for a blog.
There we go. Hey. There we go. Right?
Yes.
I'm doing that. That's the advice I'm going to execute on now. Like, I'm going to have to do the blog post. My open rate, I went from open rate of 30% to 100%. Here's how I did it, right?
That's good. I like that.
Everyone, follow Pia. I think she's brilliant on everything. The 1,300 people that listen to this every episode, follow her. Pia, I'm pretty sure you've made this, but can you mention again where people can find you?
Yeah, Pia Loves Your Biz, at Pia Loves Your Biz, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. Come join my Facebook group, Badass Your Brand. You'll find other stuff there.
Okay.
Thanks.
I love you. You're the greatest thing ever.
Thanks, Jeremy. Good luck.